We'll just get.
I'm Alan Channing. I'm the president and CEO of the Sinai Health System in Chicago, Illinois. Sinai Health System has been around for 90 years. It serves a very diverse community, but one that is dominated by Medicaid patients. 60% of our revenue is Medicaid, which makes us a very unique provider in the Chicagoland community.
Okay. Then I understand there was an article recently in the New York Times too, the effect of charity care. How is that showing up in your hospital walls, within your hospital walls?
Well, as a community provider, we start with basic mission, vision, and values, who we are, what we want to be, and how we're going to go about it. And incorporated in that, and it actually flows from the origins of the hospital as a Jewish hospital, faith-based provider. And it's based on the concept of Tikkun Olam, which comes from the Old Testament, which literally translated as repairing the universe. So what we see in our organization is a commitment to the community and a commitment to the individuals who come to the hospital. Everything we do flows from that. So thinking about this issue of the growing uninsured, particularly in these economic times, what we struggle with is how are we going to respond to this demand? Interestingly enough, over the last 2 years or so, we've seen a continual growth in our ER volume. We're up about 12.5-13%. Of that growth, 50% is uninsured. And with this economy and the number of layoffs just have been announced this week, we anticipate that at some point down the road, in the not too distant future, that's going to continue. So the challenge to us is, what do we do as a provider to respond to this need in the community? In our case, an environment that's being underpaid for its Medicaid work. Illinois gives us about 74 cents on a dollar of cost. So we struggle every day to try and figure this out. What we try and do is look for where are the opportunities to improve care by improving the processes that we're using. And the ER is a terrific example, because what we've done is gone back to the emergency department and said, okay, we're seeing this increase in demand. We don't have the resources to build a new emergency department. Where can we improve the flow? So we created a process that's really driven by the ER staff and linked to the inpatient staff. So from the time the patient shows up in triage, how do they move through the system and, if necessary, get admitted? We set a target of seeing patients by a provider within 30 minutes and then moving them through. So we've called this moving patients in 30 minutes, MP30. So the MP30 project has allowed us to be pretty successful with that. And we implemented it just before this huge increase in volume came. I think we hit about 74% of the patients were seen within 30 minutes, which is, we thought, pretty impressive. Then we got slammed with this growth of patient population, in part because one of our neighboring hospitals closed its ER. We're down to now about 52% or 53%, still not bad. So we've increased our volume from about 38,000 patients a year to 60,000 patients a year. Still meeting our MP30 targets that are a little better than 50%, and an increase in uninsured.
So the effect then too of the charity care that is provided in your hospital, how is that obviously affecting your bottom line, but how are you dealing with that? What strategies have you implemented to deal with that?
Well, the biggest thing we'd like to do is keep the patients out of the hospital and out of the emergency department. So we work with four different federally qualified healthcare clinics in the region. We'll try and get patients to what everybody's talking about these days as a medical home. Keep them out of the emergency department. That in and of itself is only marginally successful. Some of the other things we've tried that I think are really unique to what Sinai is doing is being an urban population. We see a huge number of asthmatics in our neighborhood, and particularly child and adolescent asthmatics. So we tried to figure out how could we keep them out of the emergency room. It's a fairly costly to take care of them. And what we did is we, Chicago is the home of community organizing, made famous through the Obama campaign. And we took a leaf from that page, or a page from that book, rather, and said, let's go out to the community, find folks who live in the community who've got the right spirit and communication skills. We'll teach them about asthma, asthma triggers, asthma intervention, what you need in your house, what you shouldn't have, smoking issues, all the things that impact child and adolescent asthma. So we've done this now on a kind of a block-by-block basis in the area around the hospital. And we've got some pretty impressive statistics that show a huge decline in kids coming to the ER for asthma, particularly in acute distress. A documented increase in patient days, really school days, kids in school, and there are anecdotes about these kids who never participated in sports who are now participating in sports, which has all been pretty exciting. So we've reduced the demand on the ER, we've increased the health status of the community, and we've had an interesting learning for us as providers in this. As the outreach workers, the community outreach workers, went out and talked to their friends and neighbors, they learned that the providers were doing a terrible job communicating with the family about what's an asthma trigger, how you use your rescue drugs, how you use your maintenance drugs. And as a result of that learning, we've come back to the providers and sort of re-scripted the patient education part at the front end. I mean, all of which is, I think, has made a significant difference.
Very impressive, actually. The results are very impressive. Being the home of Chicago and our new president, what do you see down the pike for, we're looking at universal health care for all Americans? How do you feel that's going to affect your hospital in particular? And what do you think are the possibilities where we can go from here?
So the idea of universal health care for us is very attractive. As I mentioned, we have 60% Medicaid, but we also have 12% uninsured. So trying to deal with this population, it means that a universal coverage program will help us substantially. What we try and balance, and one of the things I'm a little anxious about at the moment, is that if everybody has an insurance card, and let's assume it pays some reasonable percentage of cost, so that the incremental cost for a provider of taking care of this next patient on universal coverage is not outrageous. Those patients then look attractive to the hospitals and providers who heretofore hadn't wanted to see them. So it's going to change the competitive dynamics, I think. Now, you asked a question earlier about how does a place like mine survive with this kind of a payer mix? We've done a couple of things. First thing is that when you look at our physical plan, it's old and tired because we haven't been able to generate the bottom line to invest in the physical plan. And the money we've put into our depreciation allowance, we've taken a significant part of that and put it into operations. So that's one. The second thing, and I think is a pretty interesting story, and that is that when I talk about our mission and this concept of Tikkun Olam, virtually all of our employees are there because they're committed to the mission. And over the years, they have literally underwritten the state's obligation to pay for care. So it was only up until the last 2 years that there was an employer-contributed retirement plan for most of the employees. In other words, they were self-funding their retirement. The benefit structure was lower than the competing organizations. They were underwriting the cost of care that was in part the state's or the community's obligation. So, you know, we've struggled with this for a significant period of time. And, you know, it's real for me, it's really an honor to be able to work with people who have made this commitment to healthcare and to the community.
Great. We have, excuse me, we have so many challenges currently facing all of our hospitals across the country, whether it's bond ratings and the difficulties in borrowing money for capital, or the growing number of uninsured as the joblessness increases as well. What, and of course too, with the supply chain increasing costs on medical devices and everything else that goes within, what do you think is the one challenge most pressing right now within your walls?
You know, I'm not sure there's one challenge. I mean, there's so many of them. We've really focused on being a quality provider. Because at the end of the day, if we're not providing quality healthcare, whether it's the patient experience in terms of customer service and satisfaction, the clinical outcomes and the clinical processes and the administrative processes behind all of it, if we're not doing that, then no matter what happens, we're not in business. You know, the community isn't going to come to us. So we've invested a lot of time and energy in that. I think the next big thing for us, as we look at the notion of pay for performance, I think with this quality initiative, we really accomplished that, and we've set ourselves up in a good way to do that. But taking a step back and thinking about what I described a minute ago in terms of the competition, if we're not able to access capital in some reasonable way to rebuild a plant that, when I came, I asked the CFO if what the average age of plant was, you know, fairly standard calculation, and he just laughed at me and said it was old. Well, it turns out to be 5 or 6 years old than the average of the industry. But if we're not able to replace this tired plant and provide a contemporary environment for the patient, then our institution stands to be at risk in this competitive environment. So access to capital is really an important part. But it goes beyond that. And it really is how cash flows to what one might describe the have or the have-not hospitals. And we sort of think of ourselves as a have-not. Here at the Premier Governance session, I had a chance to talk to one of my colleagues who I've known for a long time, and he was busy on the internet checking the stock portfolio for his organization and was concerned about how much he's lost in the market. I'm concerned about making payroll next month. So there's this huge dichotomy in the industry between those folks who are safety net providers and those folks who, by the, as some people describe, the accident of geography, dealing with a more financially robust patient population. What I'm hoping is that in the Obama administration, as they rethink sort of the structure and what they can influence, is that there will be opportunities to add resources to the safety net providers so that we're able to continue with our mission and continue to help make a difference in the community.
Okay, and what do you think would be the most pressing opportunity that we have the Obama administration is coming to play with lots of healthcare reform ideas. What do you think is the one thing that we can do right now to make the biggest difference within science?
Well, there's a talk in Washington about the revising the FMAP, the Medicaid match from the federal government. That would have a very large impact, the Sinai in particular. So if I were going to look for one single thing tomorrow, that's what I'd look for.
Okay, great. Do you have any other thoughts, too, that you'd like to share?
Well, I think the whole industry today is really struggling with who they are in terms of a community provider notion. There are lots of states that are demanding that the not-for-profits are able to describe their community benefit. And while some of us get frustrated with that, I really do believe that that is a very important thing for every provider, particularly the hospital-based providers, to be thinking about and be able to demonstrate that they are making a difference in their community, that they're not just building the next pretty building.
Well, thank you for your time.
Pleasure.
And I appreciate you taking the time out from the conference to
great.
Talk with me.
Now, this thing, the camera, wandered around a lot.
Yeah, I can fix that too. We can. It self-adjusts.
Yeah, but I saw it sort of when I was waving my hands around.
Yeah,
it sort of went down and looked at my hands.
Yeah, I can actually go back on the editing software and cut that. So actually, it's a figure in here.